Blog Talk Radio.
Rah. Killer Mike Bamboo. You already know. Yeah. No surprise, I'm from a gangbang culture, but we can keep it civil or pull a thang-thang on ya. Southern California where the sun don't quit, intergenerational gang so sons don't quit. But immediately you see that the problems that's in my city are secondary to what's propelling it in my city. I mean really break it down, take poor black and brown, educate them poor, take the jobs from out the town. Then inundate them with the date of drugs and dumb TV, locked into a zoo and hunted daily by the police. Then you get a group of youth who know they don't belong, then they gather up and organize a number up strong. But see, the failure isn't seeing that the problem ain't the gang, it's the situation in the communities where we hang. So I'm so pro-gang, it might scare a motherfucker, cause I fix the misconception that the enemies are brothers.
Bang on the setup, bang on the setup, bang on the setup, upset the setup, bang on the setup, bang on the setup, bang on the setup, homie, we been set up.
I tell them, I went from a street gang thing, then I joined a military fleet marine force thing. From a little bitty gang in the south of Los Angeles to dragging bodies out of their house to help a government who hell bent on keeping money spent on the missile. The reality's the difference between them shits is little. We had the objective of arming up over money, and they had the objective of arming up over money. And we told kids join us, we the truth. Lies about protecting our black to get recruits. Then we found out we getting killed for a hood, and we don't own a single speck of dirt on that hood. Whether in a zone down south in Decatur, or in a flatlands off of Lenox and La Brea, or in a low-rise project in Chicago, big money come in and buy up our body.
So your sets up, we about to upset the setup.
We about to upset the setup.
Upset the setup.
Throw your sets up, we about to upset the setup.
Upset the setup.
Upset the setup.
I do it for the Crips and the Blooders, BGF Brothers, the real Freeway Ricky Ross and Chris Dutters. I do my thing for Hoover, I represent for Ford. So my folk and my people, so they set to support. Support Amina Matthews, she might say the shot. So maybe next summer, no mama's gotta cry. Cause maybe next summer, nobody gotta die. Hell, even if we fail, somebody gotta try. The only way the system rule is somebody gotta lie. And the lie they told is old, they base it on your race. They separate you black, you brown, you yellow, and white face. Then we further separate by joining gangs and legislate. That our neighborhoods are now at war like we are separate states. So the police occupy our hood to keep down all the drama. So the Starbucks they just built is comfortable for soccer mama. And American Apparel comfortable for all the hipsters. And it's zero tolerance for all you speaks and you niggas and you chinks and you crackers. And it ain't about who's whiter and it ain't about who's blacker, but the money is a factor. And the factor is the factor we've got moved up out the hood. When starvation is present and absent is a job, a man will simply starve or he will form a mob. If you should form a mafia, then you should think Sicilian. Buy the hood for real, every block, every building. Every bill, feed the chill, gang bang, gang bang. Bill, bill, feed the chill, feed the chill, gang bang, on the system. On the system.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson,
sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see you today.
from TVCSI.
This is the military, David.
Free Line, Revolutionary Greeting. Welcome to another edition of Jordan Intermission Radio. I'm your host, Bumai Shakir, by our goals of fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisoners. Our second goal is to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal is transferring the criminal mentality to the new African mentality. Our fourth goal to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of new African communities. Our fifth goal is to prepare new African prisoners for release, reducing new African recidivism. Our overall goal is transferring the prisoner slave complex to the being introduced to learning through educational means. Whereas once brothers and sisters reach the outside, they can be able to contribute to the building of a new African nation and building their communities by establishing institutions and programs to benefit the people's needs. Before I bring in our guest tonight, I'd like to share some events that happened in history during this week. On June the 25th, 1935, Joe Louis defeated Primo Carneiro at Yankee Stadium. In 1941, the Fair Employment Practices Commission was established. In 1979, Mozambique became an independent nation. In 2013, in Shelby County versus Holder, the Supreme Court invalidates key provisions of the Voting Rights Act, removing protection that had shielded voters from racial discrimination in 1965. On the 26th, 1859, in San Quentin Prison, Francisco Layo leads mass breakout to Chicano land prisoners, 40 escaped and 10 were killed. 1844, after slavery declared illegal in Oregon, officials passed laws that prohibit new African people from residing in the state, authorized whipping new African people from there. If found there, if you found there, they'll whip you in front of everybody. 1879, Clinton Greaves, Buffalo Soldier, received Medal of Honor. In 1919, the Black Star Line, the first all-black shipping company, organized Marcus Messier Garvey to link people of color in the world in commercial and industrial enterprises. Marcus Garvey, co-founder of UNIA, United Negro People Association, along with Amon Jacques Garvey. In 1934, Dr. W. Du Bois resigned from the NAACP in a disagreement over policy and racial strategy. He was one of the co-founders of it. On the 27th, 1833, Prudence Crandall, a liberal white woman, arrested for conducting an academy for new African female in Canterbury, Connecticut. Academy was later closed. In 1872, poor Lawrence Dunbar was born in Dayton, Ohio. In 1911, a mob of several hundred white men lynched two new African men, Tom Allen and Joe Watts, in Walton County, Georgia, as a local white judge refused to protect them. In 1914, U.S. signed a treaty for commerce with Ethiopia. On today's date, the 1770, Quaker led by Anthony Benzet opened a school for new Africans in Philadelphia. In 1864, the Fugitive Slave Act officially repealed by Congress. 1865, the Freedmen's Saving and Trust Company fails financially, devastating more than 60,000 new Africans and organizations who collected a loss of $3 million. In 1874, the Freedmen Bank closed. New African depositors had some $3 million in the bank, which had an imposing headquarters in Washington and branch in the various cities. President Frederick Douglass said later that the Freedmen Bank had been the black man's cow and the white man's milk. In 1942, Deborah Ann Lutner, civil human rights activist, always fighting for what right, was born in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. In 1964, the Organization of African American Units was founded by Malcolm X. On the 29th, 1868, Louisiana legislature met in New Orleans. The temporary chairman of the House was a New York representative, R.A. Isabel. Arthur J. Dunn presided over the Senate. 736 senators were New African. 35 of the 101 representatives were New African. In 1914, the Springer Medal Award honored by the NAACP to honor New African achievement established. In 1958, on Bethel Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama, passed by the Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth, A leading civil rights activist is bombed. 1980. The National Black United Front, the NBUF, was founded in New York. On the 30th, in 1829, Henry Highland Gardner, 1829, officials in Cincinnati used local laws to force new African residents to leave the city. In 1881, Henry Highland Gardner, former abolition leader and Presbyterian minister, was named Minister to Liberia. He died in Monrovia shortly after his arrival. In 1886, James Van D.Z., father of a new black photographer, was born. In 1917, Lena Horne, actor, singer, and dancer, was born. 1967, Major Robert H. Lauren Jr., named first new African astronaut. He was killed during a training flight on December 8, 1967, the same year, a couple months later. 1966, John Lewis quits the SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. On January the 1st, 1839, Africans aboard slave ship Amistad took control of the ship and ordered the crew to return to Africa. It was a slave rebellion on the ship of Amistad. But it was popular. We got popularized by a court case and also a people know the brother, Joseph C.N.Q. 1862, General George McClellan failed to capture Richmond, forcing Lincoln and others to think seriously about what Lincoln called touching a nigger. That's what he called it. 1868, North Carolina legislature, 21 new Africans, 149 whites met in Raleigh. 1870, James W. Smith from South Carolina entered West Point. Smith, the first new African student, and he did not graduate. They wanted to let it be known. 1873, Henry O. Flipper of Georgia entered West Point Military Academy. 1893, Walter Francis White, the voice of the NAACP, was born. In 1960, Somalia gained its independence. That wasn't long ago. Also in 1960, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah inaugurated as the first president of Ghana and Africa. In 1965, a shell padlocks a new African church in Wilcox County, Alabama, after a local civil rights group used the church as a meeting place. In 1976, Kenny Gibson, mayor of Newark, became the first new African president of the U.S. Conference of Mayors. In 1966, Mobutu renamed Congolese cities. In 2013, Choka Lumumba became mayor of Jackson, Mississippi. Choka Lumumba was a new African freedom fighter, attorney, one of the original members of the Republic of Africa, founder of a new African people organization, founder member of Malcolm X grassroots movement, and so much more. Now, those are the events happening in history during this week. We know there's plenty more, but, I'm just going to leave you with those. And, I want to thank everybody who joined our broadcast in 2014. Thank everybody who's been following us on our various social media platforms, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Thank people who've been supporting us in regard to our endeavors and work ever since 2000, the ones behind the enemy lines, but that are currently educating themselves, putting out information. All the people that are participating in our various programs throughout the years, be it through Black August, be it Mirror for Human Rights March, so forth and so on. Now, thank you all. I salute you. Tonight, I want to welcome to the show tonight, Brother Akande M. Louise Askari Balogun. Free the land, good brother. How you doing?
Free the land,
I'm strong, brother. How about yourself, brother? I'm strong,
man,
brother.
I'm doing all right.
Yes, sir. First, I thank you for coming to our broadcast to share your understanding. Thank you for working on the past, the present, and the future. But the people don't know who you are, man. Tell the people about yourself, where you're back, where you grew up, you know what I'm saying? Tell the people about yourself so they know who exactly who's speaking and where you perspective you coming from.
Okay, my pleasure. So how y'all doing? My name is Akande Balezi Askari Balogun. I grew up in Montgomery, Alabama. I lived there most of my life. Pretty normal childhood. I was, one of the kind of kids that would get in trouble a little bit. I was, when I wasn't in school getting in trouble, I was fighting, playing out in the woods, doing stuff like that. After I graduated from high school, I moved over here to San Antonio, Texas. And for a few years, I bounced from job to job, did some security work. I actually moved to Texas in 2015, and what I ended up doing was unfortunately becoming a correctional officer. They was offering a lot of cash back then. I was 19. I needed somewhere to work. So I get in there, and I think that was probably my first inkling that something was off about the way things work, but I guess I didn't put too much into it. So fast forward to 2020, you know, the pandemic came down, and the murder of Brother George Floyd radicalized me for sure. And I was looking for a solution. You know, I really dove into New African history. I started studying, you know, Malcolm X, Kwame Nkrumah, Kwame Ture, Kwasi Balogun, George Jackson especially. So I looked into other revolutionary leaders throughout history. So Ho Chi Minh, you know, Mao, Stalin, Lenin, you know, all the rest, Marcus Garvey. And I just really, you know, I really began to step up my political consciousness a little bit. And 2021 rolled around. I got connected with an organization called the Elmer Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. It was obviously an all-new African gun club that provided training, firearms knowledge, self-defense knowledge, supporting programs and supporting political pushes for certain needs for the new African community. That's when I kind of got my first introduction to the concept of a new African gun club, or the concept of a gun club in general, and how important it is for our people in particular to be knowledgeable of firearms, and that we have a very long history going all the way back to our enslavement when it comes to the use of firearms to defend ourselves. You know, the adversary is armed. The enemy is armed. They have armed. They have a cold. They have a gun culture. And unfortunately, we are woefully behind. And I want to combine the national liberation aspirations of the Republic of New Africa with the military tactics, combat knowledge, tactical knowledge, firearms training, firearm proficiency, survival, field craft, things of that nature, and I want to bring that to the New African community because, to be honest with you, I believe that those skills will be necessary in the future. But that's it for my little intro there. Give me, brother. Hello? Oh, sure.
Yeah, I'm here, brother. You hear me?
Oh, okay, there we go. Yeah, my bad. I thought I lost you for a second there. But yeah, that's about it, though. That's about it.
Okay. Now, what I was saying is that all those skills, talents, fortes, and, you know what I'm saying, capabilities are needed right now in this modern day time, man. You know, we must all remember that as new African people, our flag had the green at the top for the land, the base of the independence, right? And the black is at the bottom because there's people at the bottom of the totem pole. And the reds in the middle for the small bloodshed we need to establish the government we need. We're going to take some facts of bloodshed. And the flag
right.
is a war flag. The flag is a war flag because we're at war.
We're at war until
we get this land. You know, even if we attain the land and attain this nationality, the nation, we're still going to be at war. We have to be able to defend ourselves. So, you know, our flag is a war flag. You know, it's a flag in distress, so to speak. It's a war flag, you know. So everything you're saying makes sense in regards to what we need to be doing and why we should be doing certain things, right? You mentioned that you grew up in Montgomery, you know what I'm saying, which is one of the five states, right, you know, which is a part of national territory.
Yes,
so you understand the importance of a land. You had that background of people on the south on their own land, even though they might not have no particular politics, but it's inherent with the people in the South that want to own land, which makes a lot of sense to everybody to have that ownership of things, right, to be free and liberated.
For sure.
That aspect. You know, you also mentioned that you came into the correctional officer aspect. You know what I'm saying? What type of experience do you have in that you brought out here that changed your mentality about different things? What type of experience do you have? Did you see the brother being oppressed? You see the brother with hard information. You see the brother in the tank. What type of experience do you have? Why didn't
know? You know, first things first, the Texas Department of Criminal Justice is one of the most evil organizations on the face of the planet. I want to make that abundantly clear for anybody listening about that. I'm pretty confident that most folks know, especially black folks, most of us understand the horrendous legacy of the state of Texas. I mean, this is the reason why Juneteenth even exists, because they denied the liberty of enslaved New Africans after the Emancipation Proclamation had been signed. I mean, racism, white supremacy is baked into the land that this place is founded on, and that most definitely comes through in the prison system. Seen brothers commit suicide. I've seen brothers die from starvation, heat stroke, violence rampant through these institutions because it is accelerated and exacerbated by having horrible material conditions for the men who live there. There's no central AC right now, and I want to remind everyone that right now Texas is going through a heat wave. Right now it's 7 o'clock where I'm at now, and the temperature is around 109. You know, and I'm sitting here in the AC. So imagine what's going on with New African brothers that are in the prison system. Despite the fact that Texas is majority white and Hispanic, black men are still overwhelmingly represented in the prison system. Despite that, we are not that big of a population here. And I just witnessed that the issues there are systemic and they're individual. There were many CEOs there that, in my opinion, were absolutely sociopathic, that found pleasure in inflicting pain and suffering upon the New African men that were there. And it is baked into the culture and the attitude of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, they call it, system there. They are very, very strict when it comes to political prisoners. Political activism, you know, you will absolutely put a target on your back if you engage in any form of national liberation or revolutionary activity of any way, shape, or form. You're immediately isolated and separated from the rest of the inmate population there because they, once again, they want to ensure that you, to be blunt, to stay enslaved. I mean, many of the units, they call them now, one of the older phrases they used to use from were farms. And that's because the majority of them were actual plantations that were then converted into a different kind of plantation following the on-paper abolition of slavery here in the United States. So many of these places, you know, once again, Texas has the largest – Texas in general has the largest law enforcement agency in the country, which is the Department of Corrections here in Texas. They have the most members out of any organization in the United States. They have the most prisons and the largest prison population in general. And they have made oppression almost like a science. And I'll tell you what, you know, if revolutionary activity accelerates, that is definitely a very, very large target. There are a lot of brothers locked in there that could benefit from that political education and knowledge. But unfortunately, that system is probably one of the most cruel, inhumane things I've seen in my life. And that definitely had a large impact about me coming to understand what was needed to liberate our people, for sure.
Oh, okay. Okay, for the people who listen, and people who are listening in the future, right, what do you feel are some things that people can do to assist the brothers in there? You know, whether it's suicide, you know, it's suicide prison too. You know, what people can do to assist them?
Oh, for sure.
What are some of the things you feel like they need?
Sponsor an inmate. You know, there's a system there now where you can just, you know, look up an inmate, find out their history, find out what they're about, and write to them, let them know that they're not forgotten. You know, especially when it comes to the political prisoners, which there are many here in the state of Texas, that definitely need that motivation. They need to know that the outside world cares about them, right? Like the way the prison system works in the United States, it's designed to isolate the new African from the rest of his community, which is one of the reasons why they locate these prisons in white country areas. These areas are already conservative. The people who live there are already racist. They're already white supremacists, so that's not something you have to worry about. Trying to put a prison in the black community increases the likelihood that somebody may assist in them physically escaping the actual facility. So the goal there is the isolation, is essentially to disappear people. So one of the best ways you can combat them attempting to disappear new African people is to let them know that you still actually care. You know, write them letters. You know, if you resonate with the message of a particular political prisoner locked up in the Texas prison system, you know, start a correspondence with them. You know, get their story out. Help, you know, put money on their books. You know, actual material help. You know, send books to them. Things of that nature. That's one of the ways you can help out. I myself in my personal policy when it comes to the prison system is complete abolition. I believe in the complete releasing of all new African prisoners to be rehabilitated or retrialed by the provisional government of New Africa after freeing the land. That's my official policy there. They should all be released. I don't care what their crime is, because in my personal opinion, there has never been a new African that has gone on trial in this country that received a fair trial. It's impossible to receive a fair trial under United States jurisdiction, in my opinion. That's just how I see that. But one of those ways is to let them know that they're not forgotten. And if push comes to shove, you know, we do have – I'm just going to say we do have examples of radical action being taken in order to assist prisoners. But I'll leave that there.
Okay. I understand that statement wholeheartedly. I understand that you identify as a revolutionary new African national. What does that actually mean, you know, for the people who listen? What is a revolutionary new African national?
So a revolutionary new African national is an individual that believes in national liberation, and one who identifies as a conscious new African citizen, which I do, who understands the necessity of, you know, what Malcolm X said, land and bread, in order for us to heal from the damage caused by capitalism, the damage caused by imperialism, the damage caused by settler colonialism under the system we're living here with the United States, that those five states are a part of the history of our people. That territory absolutely should be ceded to us for us to build our own actual nation state with our own government, with our own security forces, with our own justice system, with our own food, water, education, and infrastructure, because as far as like Martin Luther King said, maybe about a couple of months before he was assassinated, he says, "I may fear that I have integrated my people into a sinking ship." And in that way, I've identified that the United States of America is absolutely a sinking ship. You look around you, and, you know, Florida, one of the highest population states in the country, is getting ready to essentially eradicate black history. Fascism in general, white supremacist fascism in general in this country is on the rise. It is becoming more mainstream. These white supremacist organizations are gaining steam. Law enforcement is working alongside them openly. You know, it was open back in the day, and that's coming full circle again, where you're seeing, oh, this law enforcement officer has, like, neo-Nazi tattoos. They're throwing up white supremacist gang signs and things like that. It is illogical to me to think that you are going to somehow integrate into a system like that with individuals like that on an individual basis, and I mean separation from the Euro-American settler altogether. You know, there is something toxic, poisonous, and violent within their culture where they cannot help – to me, politically, they cannot help themselves but to oppress the new African. In order for them to live the way that they live with their material excesses and their hoarding of wealth, that – is dependent upon the oppression of the new African. You take the feet from under that, and the rest of that system collapses. You know what I mean? You know, we are looking down the barrel of one of the most violent empires in human history. We're talking 500 military bases all across the world, the largest military, the two largest air forces, a massive nuclear arsenal. And if this empire is allowed to continue to grow, the suffering of our people here obviously is going to increase. The oppression abroad in the continent of Africa will continue to increase because they have military bases there. So as a revolutionary new African nationalist, my goal is to free the land by any means necessary, and this is part of my passion for teaching people firearms and tactics and such, because I think that it is very naive to assume that violent, strategic, educated, disciplined, ideological strategic violence against the enemy will not be necessary to achieve liberation. I think that it will be necessary to achieve liberation. So that is my stance, is I want those five states to be an actual nation state where we can actually rebuild and actually heal. I don't believe you can heal the damage that white supremacy has caused us by living amongst the enemy. You know what I'm saying? So that kind of boils it down there.
Okay. Okay, I appreciate it. I understand that. Tell us a little bit more about the Elmore Geronimo Pratt Gun Club, and did this inspire you or motivate you to start a new African Gun Club?
Absolutely, it did. You know, those brothers over there, they are the real. They are absolutely the real deal. The commander of that outfit, General Nick Bezel, is very squared away. He's ex-military himself. The organization squared away, the weapons, armor, the tactics, the training, all of it was top tier, and that 100% inspired me. You know, and they aren't the only ones. You know, there's a multitude. There's like a renaissance of militant new African organizations that have shown up. So there's Elmer John Earl Platt Gun Club. There's the Huey P. Newton Gun Club. There's the Fred Hampton Gun Club. They're starting to develop because as the repression of our people continues, the natural reaction is going to be an uprising. You know, when you repress people, the only thing that's going to happen next is that they're going to explode eventually, and we're seeing that now. You know, I am an example. The repression of witnessing a new African brother murdered in 4K while no one did anything to stop them, that is a radicalizing experience, not just to me, but millions of other new African people around the country. That's when everyone wanted to get involved in protests, and when many of those new African folks realized that the protest strategy was inefficient, then they ran over to the militia side, to the armed side, I'm going to say. You know what I'm saying? Many of these organizations, they don't have a lot of teeth. You know, a lot of these mainstream, I call them civil rights organizations, they don't have any teeth. Power seats nothing. You know what I mean? In order for you to engage with the power structures, destroy them, and claim our land, you're going to need force, point blank, period, end of discussion. So my experiences with them and going out on, you know, maneuvers with them and meeting up with other organizations, standing toe-to-toe with law enforcement, standing toe-to-toe with the FBI, standing toe-to-toe with police chiefs, and looking in their eyes and seeing the fear and that let me know that, oh, okay, these people are only aggressive and violent when they have an unarmed victim. When we would do our marches, there was not an iota of aggression from any state actor. Of course, you get your name calling and your hooping and your hollering from the white residents of the areas we walk through, but I put it like this, they all knew what was up. They knew the consequences of what was dealing with, and my own personal mindset was, I'm sitting here in level 4 body armor, rocking my AR-15 boots, ready to go. I was absolutely 100% prepared to do what was necessary to protect me and my outfit, as well as any of the other new African individuals that were unarmed that were with us. And switching from this, you know, passive kind of patient worldview or viewpoint when it comes to getting a liberation, all of that evaporated, and I realized, oh, if I get good at shooting, if I get good at field craft, surviving in the wild, if I get good at military and tactics, you can move, you can change the world. I mean, I give you an example. In Cuba, during the Cuban Revolution, it took 50 guerrillas to take over that army. And the army that they were fighting, the Cuban army under Fulgencio Batista, that army had the United States backing it. And they still lost because they had 50 disciplined, organized guerrilla cadres dedicated to liberating their nation from American oppression. And once I learned that is how all these, the Russian Revolution happened that way, the Chinese Revolution happened that way, the Vietnamese Revolution happened that way, the Haitian Revolution happened that way, it's the answer is looking you in your eye. Those people did not kumbaya their way to victory. They did not sing, dance, shuck, and jive their way to national liberation. They took it by force. And when I saw what EGPC was doing, when I saw what the other gun clubs were doing, marching, standing side by side with all these armed brothers, I began to realize, oh, this is what it needs. This is what it's going to take to get our liberation. And I combined that hyper-militant mindset with new African ideology and a national liberation agenda, and that led to the creation of my own organization, the New African Gun Club. But that experience with EGPC exposed me to the reality of what was necessary to get our national liberation.
Okay. What type of programs or activities does the New African Gun Club engage into? Do y'all feed the people? Do y'all have handgun training class? Do y'all patrol the community? What do y'all actually do? What are some of the things y'all do?
Okay, so as a gun club, one of the primary things is getting new African people trained. So we provide free training for anybody in that lives in Texas. You can come down to San Antonio. The training is free. The only thing you would have to bring is optionally, of course, is ammo, eye protection, ear protection, and the gas to get to the range. We got everything else. We'll make sure that you have a thorough understanding of the safe and effective use of a firearm, majority of firearms, not just handguns. So handguns, I have extensive training in the usage of rifles. You know, obviously the most common one, the AR-15, semi-automatic and pump-action shotguns, things of that nature. That is something that we provide for free for all new Africans, even if they're not a part of the club. Because at the end of the day, I use it as kind of like an opening. Once I get you to understand the necessity of self-defense, then I can discuss with the new African individual the political side and see where they're coming from there. So that's one thing we do provide training. Obviously, tactical training within the organization itself, I will be providing my members with the training from my experience with other gun clubs and from my own academic study of military science, war science. Feeding the people every Sunday. We bring out warm, hot meals, home-cooked meals out to around 40, 50, 60 sometimes. Houseless people that live in this inner city of San Antonio downtown, we'll go down there and provide food for them, clothing sometimes, hygiene packs, things of that nature. And, of course, political education as well, obviously, is a very big one where we are teaching the ideology of independence, of New African independence. We want to get rid of the idea, get rid of the mindset of integration and introduce New African people that come into contact with us that, hey, there is a movement out there that is designed to actually give you liberation. So we definitely want to push the political education as well. So the three pillars are militia training, acts of service amongst the community, and political education. Those are the three pillars of the New African Gun Club.
You said Geronimo Pratt. No, Geronimo Pratt was a conscious African citizen himself, right? He identified with a lot of people in the African independent movement. He also with the aspect of he was the type of brother that actually went into the military, got the information, and brought it back and started building in the community,
Identified
the Black Panther Party, he was one political prisoner. He identified strong with a lot of different formations. You have independent, especially a lot of the underground forces,
That's right.
He pushed the agenda regarding to certain things, right? So there's some history out there about for people who listen and people listening in the future by Errol Jerome Pratt, in regards to him doing all this time. He was actually with Deputy Minister of Defense for the LA chapter of the Black Panther Party,
That's right.
So formerly headed by Bunchy Carter, who was on the former leader of the Slaughtons, who were also in prison during the time of Comrade George, and whether with Eldridge Cleaver during the time of Comrade George, he was all in prison in California together, where he educated himself at. Just putting that information out there, people who are listening, people who are listening in the future as well, right? You mentioned this gun club, right? What if an individual were interested in joining it, how would they go about doing so? Would they do it at the concert? Either have a website or how to go about joining this gun club or how to go about joining it or getting engaged in their activities?
So we don't have a website just yet. Usually we operate through Instagram. So, I am always available for you to hit me up. You can hit me up on Instagram. The handle is just NAGC, or you can write it all out, New African Gun Club. It should show up there. You can give us a follow. You can give me a DM, and then we can communicate and talk with there. If you're interested in the training, of course, same thing. Just hit me up. Just tell me that you may not be interested in joining the club officially, but you are interested in getting the training. That's more than acceptable. You can do that. But right now it would be through our Instagram.
Okay. Appreciate it. I understand that you're a USPCA competitive shooter, and you've been doing it for 10 years, right? Tell us a little bit more about that. What does that actually involve? What is that, for the people listening right now, the people listening in the future? What is that?
So this is going to be a very niche topic, so I'm going to try to break it down, right? So the USPSA stands for the United States Practical Shooting Association, and they are a part of a larger organization known as IPSC, I-P-S-C, which is the International Practical Shooting Confederation. And USPSA is – I want you to imagine it as like NCAA and official sports like NBA, NFL put together. Right. It is the premier conference for actual practical shooting. The best and greatest shooters the world has ever seen compete or got their start with USPSA. It's basically an organization that has a series of divisions that you can shoot in. Right. My division is I shoot limited optics, which basically means that it's a handgun. with a electronic sight, a red dot sight on the top of it, and a magazine well for limited. And for carry optics, it's just the optic itself. That is the division that I compete in. Right now I'm a C-class, so right in the middle of the pack. I'm hoping to get up to B by the end of the year. And a part of it is, you see, the main goal of USPSA in terms of shooting is speed and accuracy, right? Being fast and being accurate. And the scoring system reflects that. The target you're shooting at is essentially a human silhouette, just the top half, with a head box, right? So it's two shots per target usually. In the center, there's an A zone. Outside of that is C, and on the fringes is D, and that's to represent the importance of the areas you're shooting at, right? So right in the center, near the heart, where the heart and lungs would be, that's the A zone. You hit that, you get 10 points each shot. And they're dividing the points you make based on how many targets there are, and they divide that by the time it took you to actually finish the course. And that incentivizes being both accurate, obviously, to score your points, and being fast. And those two are important for the practical aspect. If you are accosted in the street, you need to defend yourself. Those two principles supersede anything else when it comes to firearm. Well, when it comes to shooting, you draw your firearm in a fast manner, and you engage the target quickly and accurately in order to bring down that threat. And that's what the competition aspect simulates. It is extremely important that when you are training in firearms, that you are utilizing the latest methodology and training techniques as well. Coming from USPSA, coming from the competition shooting world, that has influenced how I teach other people. I treat it as a science. I'm always looking for the best way to get the best performance out of an individual with a weapon in their hand. And I believe that people that are there's a fine line between individuals that are into guns, that own guns and go shoot at the range every once in a while, and those that are competing and actually training with those firearms. I encourage anyone who has a firearm to actually compete, because you do not know where you stand in terms of skill until you've engaged in a competition on a national scale, by the way, because these competitions, people fly in from all around the world to do them. Even in your local area, you compete in your local match. You know, you may be really cool with, you know, with you and your friends, you're shooting at the range. When you step up against people that are really trying to get better, let's just say you'll get humbled quick. I was humbled myself when I first started competing. It was very embarrassing, but it was a very important lesson that, okay, I need to get serious about this. There are when I go to these competitions, these matches, especially here in Texas, you know, there's a lot of white men out there. There's a lot of white dudes out there bringing their wives, their children, you know, their kids are out here competing, and there just ain't a lot of us. You know what I mean? And so owning a firearm in general, training with it is important, but now you're adding another echelon where, like, oh, you want to be the best at shooting. You want to reach a higher level of shooting, and that's something that we are woefully behind on. And so I want to expose New African people to competition shooting to get those skills. Because once you have the shooting portion down, then we can start talking about tactics and military strategy and things like that, because you already have the operation of the tool done. So, for like, my call for the day for that would be, please get involved in your local USPSA competition. Do some research on it. Get involved with it, because it will make you a better shooter. It'll make you a better warrior. It'll make you a more useful asset in the security apparatus of the Republic of Africa, in my opinion.
Okay. I appreciate that. Just the information. Can you tell us what your name? What is your name and your whole name? What does it mean? What do all the words come from? What does it actually mean? What is the significance of those names and words?
So my ancestry is Yoruba. My ancestors come from what is now modern day Nigeria. The entire name is Yoruba. Akande just means firstborn. Askari Malezi it means guardian and protector, and Balogun translates to warlord.
Okay. I got you. Got some Swahili in Europe. I got you. Tell a little bit more about this. This closed quarter battle. What exactly is that? You know what I'm saying? What a closed quarter battle.
Oh man. Ooh. Okay. So close quarters battle is an interesting one. So in military science, close quarters battle is essentially engaging threats, fighting with firearms, usually in buildings. When you think CQB, it doesn't have to be buildings, but usually it's a smaller section of a larger umbrella term called military operations in an urban terrain, MOUT, M-O-U-T. That's about fighting in cities themselves, not in the countryside, not in the mountains, not in the forest, but in the actual city, how to fight there. And then CQB is moving through structures themselves, moving through the alleys, the doorways, the rooms, room clearing. CQB in particular is a very, very special, dangerous, unique skill set in the military itself, and not everybody is good at it. I believe that it's very, very, very useful to understand, because if you live in the United States, you live in a building. If you own a firearm and you have to defend yourself, you're doing CQB because you're engaging in a close-quarters battle inside of a building, and that is something that mostly everyone will be doing. And considering that the New African concentration of people are located in the urban areas, learning and understanding the concept of how to gunfight in and around buildings is extremely important, and it is a science, and it is difficult to learn. It is dangerous. Being the offensive player in a game like that is just as dangerous as the defender, you know, defending a building requires knowledge of CQB. Actually, one of the most famous stories of Elmer General Pratt is that he helped defend the Los Angeles headquarters from a SWAT raid, killing multiple officers during that time, utilizing his knowledge of MOUT from his experiences in Vietnam. So that illustrates the importance of understanding close quarters battle from a revolutionary standpoint. Let me give you an example. A situation where your headquarters or building that you're operating at, if you're an organizer, if you're a revolutionary, has been compromised, and the state sends forces there to raid you, to arrest you, to kill you. I mean, you see what happened to Fred Hampton. You know, sometimes these aren't just arrests. This is, oh, this person has been identified as a revolutionary. Okay, we need to remove him from this plane of existence. When those type of events occur, and you have a disciplined military, and you have a disciplined group, disciplined cadre that is educated in both firearms usage skills and the CQB, that entry is going to be absolutely hell for anyone that's going to attempt to remove you from that building. And that's why I find it to be extremely important to understand close quarters battle in particular.
True indeed, you know, when they get things, you know, like you had mentioned various revolutionary struggles, right? From Haiti to Cuba to Vietnam, and you know, so forth and so on, right? We look at those particular things, aspects of things. We know in the guerrilla warfare, we know that everything around you serves type of usage. You know, that a guerrilla uses everything around him or her as a weapon of a tool. To the people that they're opposed on, right? So in regards to that aspect, like everything around you, you know in particular, everything what it is, you study, you see what everything is, you analyze, you see what you can use for a tool, you look at the escape routes, you look at the entrance route, look at how many people can be there, you look at the feed, you know, you look at everything, particularly from that reaction standpoint, you know, and like the urban guerrilla warfare, there was something that was taking place a lot during what we want to turn the rebellions during the 60s and the 50s. The people were rebelling during the early 60s and late 60s, right?
Oh, buddy, I think I lost you, brother. Hey, brother, I think I lost you.
Yeah, my bad. I dropped off.
I was saying,
you know, you look at those situations, you know, even when you go back to the slave rebellions and that time, they might be so far and so on. They're waging the guerrilla warfare as well, you know what I'm saying, to establish the independence that they were pushing for, you know. So those things, all that's necessary. We're about to train, even when you look at the history of the Republic of New Africa, when their first attack being New Bethel, when they defended themselves in New Bethel in 1969, New Bethel to defend themselves, or when they defended themselves at RNA 11 in Jackson, Mississippi, in August 18, 1971. And both times, there nobody from outside saving the casualty, but we were casualties on the pig side. You know what I'm saying? FBI, all kind of individuals, local police, they had military, all kind of people engaged in these struggle against us to try to suppress us due to the fact that we wanted to be independent, we wanted to free the land, you know? So all this stuff is necessary. And also, thing to note is that the Great Republic of Africa is a revolutionary government within itself. It's a revolutionary government. You know, we're revolutionary
right.
necessary for the change to take place. It's not something that's passive. You know, it's something that's active, you know, and it's a reality. You know, we also understand that in a reality that we got to fight the war from a different standpoint. Some parts are going to be we armed struggle. Some parts are going to be technological. Some parts are going
right.
to be informational. You know, they got different parts to it. So everybody need to find their place in the movement and fit in and do what they do. Like John Clark say, whatever you do best, do it for the people. You know,
that's
and,
right.
John Clark also talked about, you know, that we got to have some kind of land base, a match to identify what we're doing as a nation of people. So that way we're a new African. So everything makes sense in regard to what we're doing, right? You know, if a person wanted you to come out somewhere and do something, would you be willing to travel to do so, to move around,
oh,
do certain
sure.
things? We willing to do that? Okay.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. My only requirement for me personally is that it be in the South. Reason being, obviously, you know, African territory, it is what I'm familiar with the most. Obviously, that's one thing. But on a legal basis, so I don't know if you are familiar with the idea of reciprocity of firearms licenses from Texas all the way over to South Carolina. Most of those states are open carry, constitutional carry states, and they also have reciprocity with the Texas license to carry. I do not go to locations where I cannot carry my firearm. That is a recipe for disaster. So unfortunately, some of the larger states I won't be able to go to, like California, unfortunately, that's out of the picture. New York, same deal, unfortunately. You know, I love my comrades out there, but it's just the laws, they're way too strict, and I refuse to move around an environment with the state being there training without, you know, access to my firearm. But if you live in the South, Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, Florida, Louisiana, Tennessee, South Carolina, Arkansas, I am more than willing to travel to provide training, whatever is necessary.
Okay. I appreciate that. You know, I appreciate that. Are there females? Is there new African women in your organization?
That's correct. Yeah. So I do have two, actually. It's two men and two women.
Okay. So you got a cadre going on. That's what's up.
Yes, sir.
You know, so the women receive the same training that the men got. Is all the training equal to everybody? Regardless of your six.
Absolutely. So, and that's another very, very important thing. You know, in recent news, unfortunately, we had that little situation that happened over there in Chicago where that brother decided to attack that sister in that store. And the young brother, the child, the 14-year-old, came back with a firearm and did what he had to do in order to protect his mother. And so I take training for new African women extremely seriously. Throughout revolutions all around the world, women have been an incredibly important part of revolutionary action all the way up to this day. You know, we can never forget the likes of Angela Davis or Asada Shakur, Queen Mother Moore. We can't ignore the importance of the female freedom fighters that have fought for liberation all across the world, especially in Africa, especially in the United States as well. So everybody gets treated the same. Even when it comes to unarmed combat, you know, I've been training martial arts for 10 years, and it's been grappling, right, wrestling, judo, jiu-jitsu. You know, I prefer to focus on martial arts that have a really true, proven track record of being successful in unarmed combat. You know, no movie stuff, no fantasy stuff. And I give them that exact same training. They're expected to have the same standards as men. They're expected to be able to take down a man using these techniques. They're going to get the exact same stuff and can be held to the exact same standard.
True indeed, man. That's a beautiful thing. What are some of the materials that you use for the political education and go out to educate people? And why is political education so important?
Okay, so one of the most important things that I do is I just encourage them to actually read some of the stuff that's out there. I wasn't aware of how much literature there was about our people. I just wasn't. That is something that we are not exposed to, working, living in the enemy's territory, going to the enemy school. Obviously, they're not going to teach you about no Kwame Ture. They're not going to teach you about no Huey P. Newton. You know what I mean? They're not going to teach you about Robert Williams. That's something you got to find out yourself. And so I have a library here, and I give out books to comrades who want to read them. I have a required, not a recommended, a required reading list of books that are necessary for you to understand what we're going, what we're doing here. If you're carrying around guns, but you don't have a political information, you may as well just be a mercenary. You know what I'm saying? That is the difference between a guerrilla, a freedom fighter, and just a mercenary or a reactionary with a gun. You know, you need to know why you're carrying the gun. What are the historical material factors that make it necessary for you to use armed force? How has armed force been used in the future? What are the mistakes that our I call them revolutionary ancestors have made in regards to self-defense? You know, one of the reasons I need them to have that understanding is because I need that dedication. And what I mean by that is when I was standing toe-to-toe with them pigs in many of the states that I've traveled to with EGPC, I was blunt, you know, I was prepared to kill. That was in my heart, that was in my soul, and it wasn't because, you know, I'm this big, tough guy. It was because I knew that as a New African, that's my job. That is my dedication. I chose this. I could have chose my life to go around and just be ignorant and not understand the history of my people and not fight for anything, but I made a decision that, hey, if they start reaching for guns, we're going to send them to their ancestors. Point blank, period, end of discussion, and that didn't occur until I was thoroughly politically educated, until I had the books under me to understand what I'm fighting for and what I'm prepared to give my life for and take life for. I didn't understand that until I educated myself. So that's always like primary. You know what I mean? A revolutionary, you know, the Communist Party in Vietnam and in China, you know, these guys were launching ambushes against American soldiers, but they were still managing to study 4 hours a day, studying revolutionary literature. You know, that's the type of energy that you need to bring. You know, your people need to be educated on what the why of why we're doing things.
Sure, indeed. I agree with that. You know, you got to be a foot soldier before you become a foot soldier. You know, you got to know the politics behind the barrel, the politics behind the gun, you know. You got to know the politics behind it. You know what I'm saying? Why are you shooting? Where you defending? Because, to be honest, like you've been stating, it's not about attacking anything. It's about defending. You know, we believe in self-defense, self-determination, you know, self-respect. You know, it's about that. That's important. That's the point that you're gonna attack people just cause, nearly willy. You know, we're building an apparatus of defensive tactics, security apparatus. You know, being defend and protect our people by any means necessary.
That's
what you're talking about. You know.
Yes, sir. You know, and I also believe in the concept, and this is something that George Jackson pointed out, is that one of the questions that, you know, a reasonable person would ask when it comes to development of your own nation, say they ask, okay, well, what if the U.S. just decides to bomb it? And I'm like, that's a possibility. Yeah, I'm not crazy. You know, I know that we were dealing with one of the most powerful military empires on the face of the earth, but I also know that according to the CIA, some of the leaked documents they published when it comes to dealing with organizations in the past, when it comes to essentially what I'm talking about is an insurgency, is that is their worst nightmare. It is very easy to use an AC-130, an Apache attack helicopter, an A-10 Warthog to dominate the airspace in a foreign military convention. Those principles don't apply if you were to operate in the United States to attack a nation that is hooked on to yours. New African people still live in major cities in the United States, and I've taken, in terms of my political ideology, which I've tied to my military theory, I've taken the idea of the secondary strike from George Jackson, and I'm applying that to what would be necessary for the continued health and safety for the Republic of New Africa. You're going to need highly disciplined, trained cells of individual that are prepared to cause havoc if the Republic of New Africa is threatened from within the enemy's territory himself. We don't have access to F-22s. We don't have access to mortars or artillery batteries. We don't have access to all this high-tech gear. But all it takes is a gun. In reality, that's all it takes. A gun and some dedicated individuals that are being like, if the government gives, if the PG gives the word and they're attempting to initiate violence or pose a security threat to the Republic of New Africa, we are prepared to initiate a secondary strike upon invasion of our own territory. And this is something that the Soviets were contemplating doing against the United States during the Cold War. The Viet Minh used these tactics on American soldiers during the Vietnam War in Iraq, when the United States invaded Iraq and the nationalist forces there had to attacking them. Those people lived in the cities that those soldiers were occupying. And that's why it was such a hell to fight in. That's why America lost Afghanistan and had to leave 2 years ago. So I believe in both the defensive and the retaliatory, not offensive, the retaliatory capabilities of disciplined individuals in order to ensure the security and stability of our nation state if need be.
True, indeed. You know, that second strike capacity is something that was outlined and discussed in the Eight Strategic Elements, which is the original document from the original cabinet, right? Something that's still in existence today. You know, so Dr. Murray also lectured about this well in regard to some of his publications during the late 60s and early 70s, right? So that's something that's understood. And that also, he also mentioned that the Republic of Africa does not control the underground. They don't control no underground sources or factors or forces. It doesn't control that. So that's something that I already understood and known in regards to certain things that we're doing. And certain things that we're talking about in regard to our independence, in regard to our liberation, in regard to our fight, our struggle, you know, in regard to the independent movement in general. That bands back before we knew African independence, it was the independent movement in general that we were fighting for land because it's our birthright, you know, in general. Especially look at the history of the Maumau and Kenya, the Freedom of Land Army.
Exactly.
Things like this. And they understood that, you know, that the land was ordained to them by the Creator. So there was nowhere in the world in their mind that they're going to let any kind of foreign person take a thing in front of them that would get it into by their Creator, you know, so they wasn't going for that.
Absolutely. It was necessary, yeah. It was necessary. I mean, the U.S. has kind of convinced itself that overwhelming firepower is what's going to always win the day. And I've been keeping a close eye on just military the modern military movements and operations to this day. You know, I have my sources. And one of the changes in doctrine recently, and this is actually something that should be concerning for us all, is that there's been a steep increase in the funding and operation of special operations. So special operations in U.S. military concept are individuals that volunteer, go through a selection process, and then are trained to operate under special circumstances. So I'm pretty sure many of you have heard of them before, right? One of the big famous ones is the Navy SEAL, Sea Air and Land. Those guys, you have typical Green Berets. That's United States Army Special Forces. You have Delta Force. You have the Combat Applications Group. The CIA have their own little special operations team, and these teams are operating all across the globe without us knowing about it. That is their entire job. That is their entire purpose. To be blunt, to be crude, they are purpose-built government hitmen. That is what they do. Like if you want to boil down the job of a combat application group from the U.S. Army, what his job is, that individual's job is to kick down doors of the people that the United States says are bad and then kill or capture them. That is all they do. They're not engineers. They're not scientists. They're not doing – and the Special Forces job in particular is to go to foreign nations and train insurgencies to overthrow democratically elected governments. That is their actual, like, job. When you think Green Beret, you shouldn't think door kicking. You should think this guy is coming into your country to teach people that hate you how to better kill you. And this has happened many times before. Happened in Vietnam, happened in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's happening in Africa. They are stoking up all these civil wars we've been hearing about. Most of that stuff is due to special operations forces operating around the country that are stoking these fires and giving these people these reactionary forces, these conservative forces, training necessary to overthrow governments that are more progressive. And I've witnessed the increase in the budget and the increase in training and the focus on special operations. I mean, they have recruiting drives for these guys now. And that means that they are beginning to understand the threats of an insurgency, which means that as New African citizens, our time starts now. You know, the time to organize is now. The time to get better training is now, because we are woefully unprepared, and those individuals are not to be – pardon my language, those individuals are not to be fucked with. So, you know, we're a little bit behind the curve there, and we need to pick it up.
True indeed. You know, there's a movie that came out in the 80s, right, you know, called Delta Force, with Chuck Norris starred in part one and part two, right? you know, they actually were doing that type of work, you know. They were doing that same exact work in opposition, but it went to a foreign country. You know what I'm saying? They armed the people, trained them, you know, all kind of other stuff they're doing, you know. They were specializing in every type of activities, you know. So everything you're saying makes sense because it's historical.
That's right.
The battle against Benghazi and all that, you know, the battle against Benghazi and stuff like that, you know, stuff that took place throughout our history, you know.
You know, I try to, go ahead,
The battle against Benghazi, man, you know, it's just things that are around us that we don't see it.
I lost you again. Oh, there we go.
I was looking at something right quick. I'm looking at something. You know, again, I want to thank you for coming to our broadcast. I sure you know you understand or look forward for the work you do in the present and the future, right?
Yes, sir.
What are your final words you want to leave us with? What are your final words?
Organize, train, and buy firearms, people. If you can, if you're legally able to, today, start making plans about purchasing your first. I would suggest starting off with the handgun if you're over the age of 21 in most of these states. And if you're under, if you're 18, you got some disposable cash, I would get yourself a rifle. Seek real practical training. Do not fall for the military okey-doke. They are not the best shooters. Competitive shooters are the best shooters, so I would engage with that side of things. Join your local black gun club. Like if you, not just mine, like if you can't join mine because you're not in the area that I'm in, Elmer General Pratt is still looking for people. The Huey P. Newton Gun Club is still looking for people. The Fred Hampton Gun Club looking for people. Or just start your own. Like all you need is three or four people getting, you know, reading some books, getting politically educated, getting your firearms, and y'all go to the range together to train. But doing something in general as it pertains to the benefit of your people is better than nothing. So call for the day for me. Purchase a firearm, purchase ammo, get training, organize with likewise folks, and politically educate yourself. That's all I got.
Okay. I appreciate that, brother. You know, if you have any loved one, comrade, social by enemy line, please look at Georgia University. We have a website, which is www.georgejacksonuniversity.gdu.com. Again, it's www.georgejacksonuniversity.gdu.com. You also can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram on the same name, George Jackson University, Long Live the Resistance, Long Live the African Independent Movement, and Long Live the Guerrilla. Free land.
Free land by any means necessary. Have a good one.
Yeah, yes, sir.